Welcome back to Radio Entrepreneurs, the On The Record show from O'Brien and Levine. My name is Jeffrey Davis. We've been here all week, and flanked with me every day, all day, is Mark Z from Mark Z Legal Staffing. Mark, have you met any new lawyers this week? You know them all.
Jeff, I didn't know. I'll tell you something. I've met a lot of great litigators and a lot of attorneys, but I have not had the pleasure of meeting them all, particularly our next guest, who's very, very well known in their field.
Well, I mean, we almost had the whole interview before we even turned on the mics. He was so interesting. I hope we get back into the same story. We're going to be talking to Joe Lipchitz of Mintz Levin on commercial litigation, right?
Yep. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for coming, Joe.
Joe, talk to us about your practice.
So I am a litigation partner at Mintz Levin and specialize in complex commercial litigation, but also First Amendment and media law work as well.
First Amendment and media law have really become a lot bigger in the last couple of years and probably in the last 20 years. Whenever I'm looking at not only stations, what's going on in the media, just in terms of information that gets out there is truthful or not truthful. There's a lot of issues, obviously, that come from that. And I know you have, in your expertise as far as First Amendment commercial litigation, you've been involved with a lot of that.
Yeah. So, for example, I represent the Boston Herald. I've represented other publishers and celebrities on First Amendment issues. But to your point, the First Amendment issues and commercial litigation is beyond the media, and you see it coming up frequently in the popular press. So, for example, about the Washington Redskins and whether they can use that name, that trademark name, and there's First Amendment issues flowing out of that. We've also seen a rise in First Amendment litigation and commercial speech in the pharmaceutical space as well.
How is that? How do you see it in pharmaceutical? I sort of understand the Redskins case because that's on TV every 3 months.
Well, it's an interesting issue. So it relates to off-label drug marketing.
Interesting.
So for years, for the last decade or so, the FDA and the Department of Justice have sort of reaped billions of dollars of criminal fines and settlements prosecuting people for off-label drug marketing. And let me just explain what that is for your listeners. When a drug company goes through clinical trials and gets their drug approved for a specific use, the FDA, under the FDACA Act, requires them to only market that drug for the specific use that it was clinically approved for. The tension comes in that doctors can prescribe drugs for any use, consistent with their good medical judgment. So, for example, Viagra was a drug that was originally went through clinical studies for chest pain.
Or Rogaine, right?
Exactly. And so you have drug manufacturers, medical device companies that want to market their drugs for other uses other than what they were clinically approved for. And the government has taken the position for years that if they did that, they would be criminally prosecuted under the act.
Wow.
And that has happened. So several years ago, you had a pharmaceutical rep that was prosecuted in New York federally and convicted for off-label drug marketing. His conviction was reversed by the Second Circuit Court of Appeals because the Second Circuit said, well, wait a minute, government, you would never allege that anything that this individual had said was false. So therefore, because you're criminalizing potentially truthful speech, that's violative of the First Amendment, and they reversed the conviction. And so now if you fast forward to last year, there was a drug company called Amarin Pharmaceuticals, and that they had gotten their drug clinically approved for lowering triglyceride levels at a certain level, gone through clinical studies. The FDA on its own had done an internal study that showed that the drug was quite effective for lowering mid-tier triglyceride levels, and Amarin wanted to market it for that use, and the FDA basically said, if you do that, we're going to prosecute you for off-label marketing. Ameren took the position of, we'll see your threat of a lawsuit and we'll raise you one of our own.
Ooh.
And we'll sue you for a preliminary injunction. And so you had a drug company seeking a preliminary injunction against the government, claiming that their threats of prosecution infringed on their First Amendment rights, and the injunction was granted.
Interesting.
Which was huge news. Since that time, the court has made the parties engage in settlement talks, and then on March 8th, the parties announced publicly that the FDA and they had reached a settlement where the FDA publicly acknowledged that they couldn't limit truthful, non-misleading speech.
Interesting. That's going to really affect not only, obviously, this existing case, but that whole pharmaceutical industry and other industries.
This is a ripple effect. Right. This is a domino effect.
This is amazing.
Well, that's exactly right. So now you have drug companies and medical device companies that are covered by the act now saying, we want to engage in off-label marketing. And you've got the government changing its position, its policy position, to say, all right, we can't prohibit truthful speech. The rub, though, becomes is that they can regulate misleading speech. So the tension is, okay, what factors are the FDA going to look at in determining whether speech is non-misleading for purposes of off-label drug marketing?
That gets a little bit tough, doesn't it? Because you have to have a lot of data. You can't do that subjectively.
Well, that's exactly right. What's misleading to a drug company may be much different than what's misleading to the FDA.
Correct.
Well, and I thought of it differently. I mean, I can understand marketing material getting somebody in trouble, but let's say you and I are having a dialogue. What you say to me and what I think you say to me might be two different things.
Well, that's a slightly different issue, too, because if you're going to engage in off-label marketing, the best advice is to stay on script, right? So if you get the FDA to approve off-label marketing that's truthful and, quote, non-misleading, you've got to make sure your sales representatives out there speaking to doctors stay on script.
You know, you just explained something to me that I haven't understood for almost 40 years. Because I came out of the surgical division of J&J, and they were obsessed about us learning scripts. And I never understood why until you just explained it to me. I always thought it was too rigid.
Well, it's designed to prevent and limit your liability to litigators like me.
And now I have to apologize to my boss 40 years later.
To not promise something that you can't really deliver, you know?
I wanted to express it within my own personal style, and they were strict about what I said to everybody.
And the reason for that is that the repercussions of not following the script expose the company to criminal liability, fines, and other problems.
The other thing I was hearing from you was the liability, the individual versus the corporation, which I think is an interesting scenario to be looking at, another subplot of this whole thing.
Yeah, and I think a lot of companies have been prosecuted under this, but a lot of individuals as well. And that's a particularly scary position to be in as an individual.
Very chilling.
Right? And so now that there's this recognition that you can't prosecute truthful speech, it gives people the opportunity, a good defense, essentially, if the FDA really chooses to prosecute a case like that.
So do you go to your clients and say, listen, do you not only obviously you're litigating and defending your clients, but do you also go in and say, listen, here's the plan. Do you work with your clients as far as the different steps to avoid these pitfalls that are going to sort of pay me now, pay me later?
Well, I mean, you raise a very important point, and I think we're in a very gray area in light of the recency of this settlement. The FDA has not yet put out regulations or guidance in terms of the factors it's going to look at to determine whether speech is, quote, misleading. So you've got a great industry that wants to engage in off-label marketing. They also have, most of these companies have other drugs in the pipeline, so they want to maintain good relations with the FDA. But at the same token, you know, they want to make sure that nobody gets in trouble either. So the idea is to keep good lines of communication with the FDA and get approval for your proposed off-label marketing. But it's really time, I think, now for the government to step up and meet the industry halfway and give that guidance.
So work more collaboratively.
Oh, absolutely. I think, because this is going to be a big issue, and I think it's going to be an issue that people are going to want to watch for the next year as the FDA and the industry looks at it.
Now, you're working for a big major law firm in Boston. This is, you know, you're setting the law almost. How did you get into this whole field?
This is a good question. I started my career as a military prosecutor, which is a fascinating and fun way to start your career. So I really cut my teeth as being a really good trial lawyer raised through the Army.
I mean, like the movie A Few Good Men?
Except there were many, many, many good men and good women, too. Very good lawyers.
Sorry, I'm just quoting the movie. I'm not trying to get myself in trouble.
But no, the JAG Corps was just a great training ground for young lawyers, prosecutors, defense counsel. And when I got out of the Army, joined Mintz right out of the Army. And then I got into really representing clients in a lot of high-profile First Amendment cases almost by accident. But they're so fascinating that has sort of carried with me throughout my career. So you guys may remember from being around here the AstraZeneca case.
Sure.
So that was one of the cases that I litigated with my partners.
Wow.
And by way of quick background, the CEO of Astra USA had engaged in a pattern of sexual harassment and embezzlement and was the poster child for the Business Week article in 1996. And when he was eventually fired and terminated by the company, he then brought, of all things, a libel lawsuit against the company, claiming that his termination and the press statements around his termination had defamed him. So we actually litigated that case. The claims were dismissed. We won at trial, and then he brought it up to the SJC, and the SJC affirmed the dismissal of the libel claim with Margaret Marshall, actually, when she retired, proclaiming that being one of her seminal cases on First Amendment.
Congratulations.
Wow, Joe, it's like watching a movie listening to you. It's gripping. If somebody wants to find you and know more about commercial litigation and both sides, how would they find you at Mintz Levin?
We go to our website, www.mintz.com. Now, I think I'm on LinkedIn as well, so I'm not hard to find.
How about phone number?
617-542-6000.
Excellent.
You're going back to this chart. You know, you're going back to the baby boomer
phone
thing.
Numbers are still important.
Previous interview.
When you're driving.
Baby boomer habits.
Call Mintz Levin. Call Joe.
So I'm trying to get a jingle in my head. Joe, thanks for being on the show today. We really appreciate it.
No, thank you, Joe. Very interesting. Very interesting to hear more about not only First Amendment litigation, but also how it relates to business. It's, you know, you always hear about the First Amendment, sort of the sexy First Amendment, but you really, just how important it affects business and is involved with business.
Great. Yeah. We're going to take a break. Remind everybody this is Radio Entrepreneurs, and we'll be right back after these messages.